From Given, this is Purposing, the podcast that lifts the lid on how to run a truly purpose-driven business. I'm Becky Willen, and with the help of leaders at some of the world's most recognized brands, I'll be demystifying this often misunderstood topic into clear, actionable advice you can use in your own business. This week, I'm joined by Natalie Deacon, Executive Director of Purpose and Sustainability at Avon. Natalie led the work to define Avon's purpose and bring to life their focus on gender equality, breast cancer awareness, and violence against women and girls. In this conversation, you'll hear how to keep your purpose fresh when it's been a long-standing part of your brand, how to create change in the communities you're part of, and how to ensure purpose is fundamental to the economics of your business. But before all that, let's hear how women of tragic drama, combined with a love for simplifying complexity, led Natalie to focus her career on fighting for a better world for women. Natalie grew up in the West Midlands, surrounded by strong female role models, and in particular, her formidable single mum.
The kind of single mum that would change her own plugs and do all of the decorating and, yeah, really championed and pushed my brother and I forward. Yeah, first generation to go to university in our family.
Drawn to feminist literature, Natalie did a master's degree that focused on villainous women and tragic drama, studying the likes of Lady Macbeth and Hedda Gabler. This affinity with wronged women and storytelling is what shaped Natalie's approach to her role in comms.
The thing I really loved about that was taking, you know, some of these quite complex issues that you have to grasp with and turning it into something that people could easily resonate with. And you think, as we look at gender equality, you know, look at complicated, ugly issues like gender-based violence, how can we communicate that in a compelling way that's going to bring people on the journey?
Natalie wanted a change and found an opening at Avon. At first, it was all about getting some in-house experience, but her feelings immediately changed upon walking into the building for the first time.
It was very much the feel of the place. Went for an interview at Avon and was interviewed by a woman who went on to become a general manager of the UK, who led Avon USA, a really phenomenally impressive woman. I remember thinking, I want to work for her. I remember walking out, I can still remember so clearly the interview and walking out and phoning my husband to say, I really want that job.
Avon gave Natalie the opportunity to run campaigns that make a real difference to people's lives with a clear mission, creating a better world for women.
I'm really lucky. I love the role that I do. You know, I've had the opportunity to define and articulate Avon's purpose as the whole company knows and understands it, and to be part of campaigns that are really shifting the dial and I'm really making a meaningful impact to people's lives. So I absolutely love doing that. And every day is a school day. Yeah, the world around us is changing so quickly now, you know, whether it's the challenges to the DEI agenda, whether it's the EU Green Deal legislation and what that means for us. So still continuing to learn and grow. And I love that.
So Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I think most people will have heard of Avon, but they might not know too much about the business behind the brand. So can you set the scene for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So cast your minds back. 1886 in New York, Avon was really a pioneering business model. So this is a time when women didn't have the right to vote in our founding country in the US, when only about 20% of women worked in paid employment. And Avon's founder, a guy called David McConnell, thought that this would be a really great way actually to create an earnings opportunity, primarily for women to sell beauty products that they love to other women in their social network. So our first ever Avon lady was hired, Mrs. Albee, who set up her own network of Avon ladies and was really successful in her day. And that model really has been kind of core to who we are as a business and a brand ever since. Obviously, today's Avon reps are selling in very different kinds of social networks to the ones that they were you know, nearly 140 years ago, but we have really stayed true to that element of creating flexible opportunities for women to earn and learn, and creating opportunities for economic participation, financial inclusion for our representatives. So 140 years later, we're still doing it. And whilst a lot has changed, you know, we're still operating in many countries where women actually don't have full rights, certainly aren't in anything close to equal employment or equal pay. So the challenge continues.
And I think it's really interesting, because I think some people might assume that this idea of purpose is a fairly recent phenomenon, but actually some of the most, you know, iconic businesses in the UK and overseas actually were founded with a really strong sense of purpose, Avon being one of them, you know, John Lewis Partnership, famously owned by its employees, Cadbury's built housing for workers, even, you know, Unilever, one of the first products was about making soap affordable to poor families. So I guess one of the things that has evolved, though, I guess, is almost the sort of the discipline of purpose as a management practice within businesses. And at Given, we would say getting that right takes two fundamental things. Firstly, a really powerful articulation of what that purpose is. And secondly, making sure that people in the business actually live it. So, you know, I hear that Avon was started with a really clear sense of purpose, but how do you articulate that purpose today? And I guess really importantly, what does that actually mean in practice?
Sure. Yes. So interesting, isn't it? All of these legacy brands who essentially were founded on purpose, even though we didn't call it purpose back then. Yeah. And even actually, when I started my journey with Avon nearly two decades ago now, we didn't use the word purpose. You know, we were actually at that time called the Company for Women. So there was definitely something in that, but we didn't call it purpose. And we actually, whilst purpose is very much at the core and the heart of the business, and that has always been very front of mind and always key to, you know, even kind of leadership town halls, how we're kind of articulating what we're doing externally. We didn't have a clearly defined purpose until 2020, actually. And I was lucky enough to be asked by our CEO at the time to take on a role to look specifically at how do we articulate Avon's purpose and brand activism. And that really started inside the organisation, as well as looking at the challenges that we're trying to fix outside of the organisation. And we, after a lot of consultation, taking people on the journey, listening to our representatives and our people, we got to a very simple purpose statement, which is that our core purpose is to help create a better world for women, which is a better world for all. And for us, that piece about a better world for women is a better world for all is really important, because this is a pursuit of equality and opportunities for women, because they have this ripple effect and that makes the world around us much better. So it's interesting that we've been on this journey to identify our purpose, to articulate it, to effectively launch it. You know, one of the things we have done and frequently refresh is a purpose playbook. So we really articulate, what do we focus on? Actually, what isn't our bag? What do we steer clear of? How do we continue to energize and manage some of the really long-term campaigns that we're running around things like breast cancer and gender-based violence? Yeah, these aren't sort of 2 or 3 year campaigns. You know, in the case of breast cancer, we've been, we were a pioneer really of cause marketing in 1992 when we founded the Breast Cancer Promise. So how do we continually energize those as we go through? So yeah, we've been on that journey, like many other businesses who either did or didn't have a purpose to start with, to be very clear and structured about what is it and where does it show up.
And what are some of the things that you've done differently as a result of having that clarity?
So we have a very structured approach to where purpose shows up and how it filters through, even to our commercial vehicles. So I'm a big believer that, you know, we're not a charity, we're a commercial organisation, and it's really important that purpose supports that. So one of the things that we do is we look very clearly at What are our vehicles? You know, what are our routes to market, whether that's our own social channels, whether it's campaign space, whether it's the Avon brochure or our website, and how do we have purpose show up, and how do we get that balance between when we might be talking about causes that we support, or when we're selling product, or when it's more broadly around supporting women's empowerment and really anything that ladders up to SDG 5. So we take a very structured approach to when we're going to run our campaigns and what's always on. So you've got those peak moments as well as the always on stuff.
And you know, you talked about this already, but sort of, I guess, the importance of keeping it fresh, especially after, you know, when you've got 140 years of history behind you. So, you know, how do you keep that purpose fresh, relevant? And I guess, importantly, how do you decide the things that you're going to focus on versus the things that perhaps aren't right for the Avon brand? Because I think one of the challenges that people working in this space find is that there can be so much appetite and kind of ambition internally that you sort of open the floodgates to a whole load of different potential activities. So how do you keep focused on the right things?
It's a great question. And Avon is a very entrepreneurial culture. And we're operating in, you know, 50 plus countries where the issues that they're dealing with vary slightly, and their interpretation of purpose will vary as well. So we outline some key causes that we support. So first of all, there's kind of the core premise, which is that every sale supports women. So every time you buy an Avon product, women will benefit, either through the training that we provide, through the earnings opportunity. So actually, intrinsically, the commercials are linked to purpose, because if representatives are earning more, then they're succeeding and we're succeeding as a business. So there's a piece there that's actually linked to how the business operates that is pretty consistent from country to country. We might change the focus of the training depending on what's particularly current in different markets, but there's very much a staple piece there around how do we provide training to our reps, how do we incentivize them, how do we reward them. Then when it comes to broader cause support, essentially everything we do has to ladder up to SDG 5. And within that, we focus very much on breast cancer because we've been doing it for 30 years. And then 20 years ago, we started to tackle gender-based violence. So this is all about supporting the issues that matter to the people that matter to us. And gender-based violence impacts 1 in 3 women. So we are very, very clear with all of our teams that these are the two key issues that we speak out about and engage with, as well as economic participation for women, flexible working opportunities, female entrepreneurship, earning and learning. You know, we kind of go down a layer below that where we'll even, you know, within those areas, look at what are we going to focus on and what are we going to steer clear of, so that we give some guidance. But then at some stage, you've got to set it free. Then you've got to trust your people to live it and interpret it and execute it in the right way in their countries. So it's about having those guardrails in place and then giving that element of freedom as well for people to go out and execute.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I think, you know, Avon hasn't been afraid to lean into some quite challenging issues for a beauty brand to get involved in, as you say, like domestic violence. But I think it's also so important to make sure that that's approached in a way that feels really substantive, not performative or bandwagon-y. And I guess, as you've touched on, as a global brand, you've also got to approach issues in a way that feels relevant to the different levels of maturity, perhaps on certain topics, or the different reality of how those topics are impacting women. So can you talk a little bit more about how you manage that in practice? You know, what do those guardrails look like? You know, how do you help markets, you know, share, connect, learn from each other, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. So take an issue like gender-based violence. So our key focus with gender-based violence is to raise awareness, because it's frequently happens quite literally behind closed doors. It's shrouded by a wall of silence, and our key focus there is to break down that wall of silence and to signpost people to the charity partners that we support. So on a continual basis, really, we donate to NGOs who are on the ground providing support services. So that's our core framework. And then when we come to look at how do we raise awareness and how do we talk about it, we have to respect that this will be different in different places. So there are some areas where we won't compromise. So it's really important with this issue that we never victimize the person who's been impacted. So we wouldn't sensationalize it or show bruises, for example. We're also, particularly in the UK, very careful not to call them victims. Actually, you go to South Africa or some other places in the world, and they're very happy to use the word victim. The NGO partners are. So there has to be some element of compromise there, particularly if somebody's telling their own story, but while still respecting some of those boundaries. And sometimes you just have to do that. And, you know, there are other places, even in Europe, where we're seeing laws around domestic violence being repealed, where actually Avon cannot go out and bluntly challenge some of the legal status quo. So there, we just have to make sure that the language is suitable and we're not putting any of our own people at risk. So this isn't necessarily being about being afraid not to take a position. This is, we will not put our own people and our representatives at risk of having their own personal safety compromised because they're speaking out about an issue that it isn't safe to speak out about.
Yeah. Well, and that was something I wanted to ask you about, given the sort of current backlash against D&I more broadly and seemingly gender equality specifically in certain markets. And I guess what's your, you know, your business operating in several markets. Is there sort of an emerging sense that the work on gender equality is done? And aside, I guess, from, you know, making sure that your people and your reps are safe, how do you combat that in the face of the current dialogue around this stuff?
It is so varied in the different countries that we work in. Even in somewhere like the UK, so you and I, you know, here talking about the pushback on DEI, actually, a lot of people could be sensitive to that or even feel it. And one of my fears in the UK, actually, is that there's a misunderstanding that we've achieved gender equality now and we can move on, when, of course, we know there's still a double-digit pay gap. Yeah. We know that in the UK and elsewhere, there's a lack of belief in the ability of women to lead, for example. Yeah, we don't see 50-50 representation in government, for example, let alone in business. Yeah. The Peter problem, isn't there, in the US, where there are more male CEOs called Peter than there are female CEOs. So that is absolutely still a reality. And sometimes we have to remind people that that is the reality and that is the starting point that we're working with, whereas in other countries it is still felt much more acutely, and you're not having to remind people that this is an issue because it's something that they are feeling on a daily basis. As I say, things like domestic violence laws being changed so that it is no longer illegal, it is really worrying, and actually just shows us that we need to carry on.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a really interesting question about how you go about that as a sort of activist brand, because I think one of the big jobs at Avon is to make sure that you continue to appeal to a younger audience, but without alienating perhaps the, you know, the existing customer base that you have. And I guess there are beauty brands who are, I guess, more explicitly activist in terms of calling out, you know, exactly the sort of things that we've been talking about. But how is your purpose helping you navigate that? So helping you appeal to younger audiences without alienating the existing customer base that you have?
Well, firstly, one of the beauties of the Avon model is this cross-generational community of women, you know, and people often have their some of their first experiences, not just of Avon, but of beauty through kind of being daughters of customers and having Avon reps in their communities. And actually, in some ways, that works to our advantage. So particularly around making this feel relevant to young people. So some of the great work we've done with Given is really starting to look at violence and abuse can start in relationships very easily, and actually being able to recognize those signs and being able to call it out and feel empowered to call it out is a really important part of tackling gender-based violence. So rather, yes, we're doing the work to fund the charities who are helping women who have got to the stage where they need to make a phone call or they need a refuge. But actually, if we can start earlier with, I don't like to call it education because no one wants to feel that they're being educated. But if we can start with some really compelling communications that feels relevant, that feels like it's targeted at a younger demographic, then we're tackling those issues in a way that feels like it's relevant to them. So the campaign that we did with Given last year, we created some really great assets and social content and a hero video that really pointed out some of the sort of watch out signs in relationships where somebody might be commenting on your appearance or telling you what to wear or suggesting that you're not spending your money on the right things. And being able to engage in that conversation is really relevant, and it certainly doesn't alienate our existing customer base. If anything, it gives them a talking point.
So I'd like to come back to your direct selling model, because I think that's a really interesting one in the sense that, as you've talked about, you have thousands of women all over the world who are selling your products, and that clearly has the potential to create, you know, real economic empowerment. But I don't think you can take that as a given. You have to really design that into the model. So what are some of the things that you've done that ensure that the way that you work with those reps really does help create that economic empowerment?
Firstly, 2 million representatives in kind of Europe and APAC, and not all of those women want to be entrepreneurs. Not all of those women want to spend, you know, 10 or 20 hours a week with Avon. Some of them, it's just a hobby that pays. It funds the Friday night Prosecco fund or the family holiday. So we have to be really respectful of that. And when you talk about how do we design in economic empowerment, it's recognizing that people have different motivations. So structuring our rewards and incentives and communication so that people can find what's right for them is hugely important. So flexibility is so, so important to our representative proposition. The whole idea here is you can earn the hours you want and the hours that you choose and have rewards that are proportional to that. So really the crux of much of the direct selling element of the model is focused around reward, retention, recognition.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. And I do think that, you know, the extent to which an organization really lives its purpose is only really evident in the decisions that it makes. And I think it's most evident in the kind of in the tough decisions. So it would be great to drill into a couple of those things, I guess, looking at it from two perspectives. When do you choose to pull out of a market? So, you know, Avon has continued to have reps working in Russia over the last couple of years when lots of other international companies have pulled out of that market. Equally, you know, it's no secret that, you know, the beauty industry has faced a huge amount of disruption. Avon has faced, you know, financial challenges. So have you managed those sort of business decisions in terms of aiming to be both purpose-driven and profitable? Are there any particular trade-offs that you've made? Are there any red lines you won't cross? Yeah, tell us a bit about, I guess, lift the lid on how decisions get made on these kind of topics at Avon.
So genuinely women front and centre. And we have continued to have a standalone business in Russia. So it's ring-fenced and self-contained. But we made a decision early on that we wouldn't take away that earnings opportunity and community from the women who are part of the Avon network in Russia. You know, given the broader context, what we weren't going to do was turn our back on those women. It's so complex and nuanced, and there's, you know, pulling out isn't necessarily always the right thing to do. I would say integrity is one of Avon's core values, and we haven't had to make compromises as far as we're concerned, even when we have to make tough decisions, certainly in terms of supporting women. There's certainly things where actually, if we had a bigger advertising budget, we would be able to do even more in terms of buying space and running purpose campaigns. So those kind of compromises, yes, but compromises of integrity, no.
I think what you're touching on there is just how important the relationship between purpose and culture is within an organisation. And I know at Avon, there is a huge amount of engagement internally with your purpose. So could you talk a little bit about how purpose shows up if you're working at Avon, and how employees are sort of able and empowered to really be involved in that effort?
Yeah, absolutely. So we all know that purpose is a key reason why people join organisations and why they stay. And yeah, we see that kind of very much alive and well at Avon, where purpose actually is very much used as a yardstick. It's, you know, it's really, as even as we're making decisions and having difficult discussions sometimes, Avon's core values and core purpose very much frame those decisions, is a filter for some of that decision-making process. So very much alive and well there. Also, from if you work at Avon, you see our purpose every day because it's on the walls, it's on your screen. It's, you know, one of the first things we talk about in any of the town halls, for example. So very much comes through there. And then more broadly, we've got a whole network of people who work on this stuff. It's their job. But we also have things like a generous volunteering policy. So everybody can take up to 3 days a year paid volunteering. We really encourage and provide opportunities for people to do that, supporting women's causes. If they don't want to, if they want to do something else, then they're absolutely free to go and do that, because you have to sort of get the balance right and respect that people may have other passions. But we also find ways for people to get engaged in that sense. And kind of more broadly than that, in terms of some of our people policies, you know, we have a menopause policy, for example. We have a gender-based violence policy. So we have this network of ambassadors across our countries who are there as a kind of a point of help to signpost support for anyone who might need it. We'll provide paid leave for anybody who is going through a situation and needs support. So it's really important to us to make sure that we're creating opportunities for our people to get involved, but also that we're walking the talk as well in terms of the support that we give to our people.
Definitely. And I guess when you look at it in the round, you know, how are you measuring the impact of your work on women's empowerment? Because I think that is one of the sort of the questions that comes up a lot in this space. And I guess my personal view is that sometimes we can get really obsessed with the measurement over a focus on really driving impact. But how are you navigating that at Avon?
I wish I could just say we had one metric and that was the answer, but we know it's not that straightforward. So at a basic level, we have, you know, how many representatives have we got and how much money are they earning? You know, their earnings, you know, are a barometer of our success. So it's really baked into the commercial model. On top of that, we'll measure things like training. So how many representatives are taking up training and how do their sales benefit as a result? And then when it comes to the more advocacy communications campaigns, we have our brand health tracker metrics, where one of the questions we ask is whether people recognise we're a company that supports and champions women. We also, in terms of NGO donations and charity donations, track how many women we help. So we know that we've funded well over 20 million breast scans. We know that we've helped 15 million women through gender-based violence situations. So we also track the impact in that way as well. The other thing we do, and say that just that I'm giving you all these examples, shows that there's no like one magic metric, but some of the other work we do is about reaching out to women and men in our supply chain. So a really great example is a program we're doing called Respect in Palm with a whole lot of other organizations, which is helping to educate and protect women's rights in our palm oil supply chains. And in those situations, we will undertake training to measure people's understanding and attitudes at the start and at the end of a piece of training, so that we can really get an idea of, are we changing attitudes? Are we at least changing behavioral intent? So lots of different examples.
So building off nearly 140 years of focus on women empowerment, where are you going next with gender equality?
Well, one of the things we're looking at the moment is the fascinating area of gender bias. So 9 out of 10 people hold biases against women. So 9 out of 10 people, not 9 out of 10 men, but women. So you know, women are upholding the patriarchy in some cases. And there's loads of frightening statistics. You know, half of people think that men make better leaders than women. 25% of people think it's okay for a man to hit his wife. So there's a lot of behavioral, attitudinal nuance in here that's very much connected to gender equality, but shows up slightly differently. And actually, we see tackling gender bias as a way to cut through some of the challenges we might face in markets where it might be difficult to talk about gender equality, but actually, if we can start a conversation around gender bias and about the strengths that women bring to the world and about the benefits of better balance, then that gives us a starting point to tackle some of these entrenched behaviours and beliefs.
I think what you've described is really interesting because it touches on the sort of the role of Avon, I guess, in the system, from the core business impacts to impacts in the sort of value chain to the sort of cultural, societal impact. And I think having a set of KPIs that speak to all of those things is really important, because I think that is how change happens when we're talking about, you know, complex systemic issues. So yeah, no, that's really great to hear. I guess one final question is about, I guess, what your advice would be for leaders who, like Avon, want to use the power of the business and the power of their brand to make an impact on these complex, challenging sort of social issues.
So I think it needs to be real. People can really see through opportunism. And when a purpose isn't really genuinely rooted in a brand's DNA, I think that shows. So I think that's kind of patchy advice, really, because I don't know how I would fare in a business that didn't have a genuine social purpose. So I don't know what you would do in that situation, in all honesty. I think one of the most important things is internal buy-in. And from my experience, people genuinely buy in principle, but the way you get it bought into in practice is to make it commercially real and commercially valuable. So even now, it's really important that I remind my colleagues that we are doing this not just to help women, and we really want to help women, but also to build brand value and resonance and recognition, and to keep people with us and to create that emotional engagement and show that we care the stuff that they care about. So I think making sure that your purpose is connected to your commercial reality is hugely, hugely important, or it won't survive if you're doing this in a business.
Natalie, thank you for being such a brilliant guest on Purposing.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Natalie. Loads of brilliant ideas there. So here are a few things I've taken from the conversation. Your purpose is so much more powerful when it's integrated into your business model. Putting female entrepreneurship and economic empowerment at the heart of the Avon selling model is such a strong foundation for all the other great stuff they do. It sounds obvious, but when your purpose is inspiring, credible, and actionable, and it's visible and vocally celebrated across the organization, it's so much easier for people to put it into practice, whatever their role. If you want your purpose to be activated in a way that's locally relevant, yes, provide guardrails, but you also need to trust your people to live it and interpret it and execute it in the right way for their customers and communities. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you'd like more practical advice on building a purpose-driven business with brilliant insights from people like Natalie, download the Insider's Guide to Purpose at givenagency.com/thinking.